Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today, we're heading into the streets of late 90s Columbus, Ohio, where a young woman named Stacy Colbert lived a life full of promise until it all ended far too soon. Stacy was independent, driven, and cherished by those around her. But one day in March of 1998, she simply vanished from her apartment. And what followed was a tragedy that would haunt her loved ones for decades.
Stacy's story shows us how easily someone can vanish, even from a place that they should have been safe. The tragedy surrounding what happened to her became a case marked by unanswered questions, missteps, and years of painful searching.
What happened to Stacy that day? And why hasn't justice come to her family yet? Today, we try to untangle the details among rumors, false leads, and misinformation. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Ricky.
And this is Crime Salad. Stacy's friends and family remember her big smile first, the kind that could light up a room and make everyone feel important. Stacy had this natural ability to cheer anyone up, to bring laughter into even the heaviest moments. People describe her as bubbly, positive, and always in a good mood. She was funny, goofy, and she carried a spirit that made people want to be around her. And Stacy loved music. She knew almost every word to the oldies. Songs from the 50s and the 60s were etched into her heart. Whether it was Van Morrison, Buddy Holly, The Supremes, or especially her beloved Doris Day, Stacy could sing along without missing a beat. And when it came to the 80s, she was just as enthusiastic, belting out those songs with the same joy and energy. But she didn't just sing, she danced. She was the kind of person who could turn any ordinary moment into a celebration, whether it was the Molly dance from the Breakfast Club or just a wild twist in the living room. She would be the first on her feet. And it was contagious. If Stacy was dancing, you just couldn't help yourself but join in, or at least smile watching her. Her friends said that she was always down for an adventure, feisty and determined to succeed, even if she got lost along the way. She had a way of taking life in stride, never letting setbacks ruin her mood. Her laugh was loud, genuine, and infectious. She was, simply put, a whirlwind of song, dance, and sweetness. A young woman who could take the ordinary and make it extraordinary.
And that's what makes what happened to her that much harder. Because someone like that deserved nothing but a full, happy life. The violence surrounding her disappearance is exactly why this case has left such a mark. When someone who seems to embody so much joy is taken, the loss reverberates deeply through her family, friends, and community.
Exactly. And we want to do this case justice, as Stacy's friends and family are still fighting tirelessly over 25 years later. Their Facebook page, Finishing Stacy's Fight, is filled with news articles from the 90s, information and details of Stacy's case that we'll share here today. So let's get into it. Stacy and her older sister, Danielle, grew up side by side in Charleston, a small town in Illinois. Only 2 years apart, their bond ran deep, more than siblings. They were best friends. constantly leaning on each other through school, family occasions, and the laughter that comes with lasting sisterhood. As they grew up together, they forged an unbreakable connection, one that carried into Stacy's college years and beyond.
Yeah, and I love that they had such a close connection, even though they were kind of opposite. Stacy was athletic, super outgoing, and bubbly, while Danielle was more measured and quiet, interested in reading, reflecting, and soaking in the calm.
Exactly. And despite those differences, their connection was powerful. They were kindred spirits in complementary ways, two halves of a deep and loving relationship. In 1993, like her sister before her, Stacy followed in a proud family tradition and enrolled at Ohio State University. It was there that she thrived. Stacy joined a sorority where she formed lifelong friendships with people who described her as the heartbeat of any room, someone who could turn ordinary days into memories that lasted forever. She studied marketing, participated in volunteer work, and landed impressive internships, including one at the Atlanta Olympics and another with McDonald's. She graduated with a degree in marketing, ready to take on the world with that same energy and determination she carried everywhere. Soon after graduating, Stacy landed a position at American Electric Power, working in the marketing division for the Foreign Development Department. She moved into her own apartment just off the Ohio State campus at the Governor's Square apartment complex. And there was one little roommate who was a big part of her life, her cat, known as Boots. And on February 3rd of 1998, Stacy turned 23, entering a high point in her life and career.
And it's so heartbreaking that this is where the timeline of her disappearance starts. It seemed like she was in a good place, and it was all taken away so quickly.
Yeah, so let's zero in on what we know about them. According to police reports, at around 6 p.m. on Friday, March 21st of 1998, a pizza delivery driver arrived at Stacy's apartment in Columbus, dropping off breadsticks. In his words, he felt very strongly that Stacy was not alone in her apartment, but he didn't see anyone else in there with her. This simple exchange of breadsticks marked the last confirmed sighting of Stacy alive. Then came Saturday, March 22nd, or to be more specific, 4 a.m. on Sunday morning. One neighbor in the apartment directly above Stacy's was awakened in the early hours by what they later described as horrifying screams and loud banging coming from her unit. But despite hearing those screams, they didn't alert authorities and they went back to sleep. The next afternoon, the neighbor decided to check on Stacy, finding her door ajar and her beloved cat Boots wandering freely outside. They knocked a few times and got no response. At this point, they still haven't called the police. They just returned to their apartment without a word to anyone.
And over, when you hear this case come up, you hear the same thing. Why didn't anyone pick up the phone and call the police that night? Imagine the difference it could have made. What if the officers had been dispatched right away while the screams were happening? Could Stacy have been saved? I mean, so many people think that she could have.
Exactly. And it's worth mentioning that the neighbors hearing screams and even checking on her and finding her door ajar and her cat roaming free has been a major point of discussion over the years. People online have expressed outrage, questioning how anyone could hear something so chilling and not call for help. Some news reports noted that the neighbor later told investigators that the noise could have been from something consensual, like loud intimacy. Others have suggested that their neighbor had their own complicated history with law enforcement and didn't want to draw attention to themselves. Stacy's friends and family later posted to social media that there were two neighbors in the upstairs apartment and they didn't call the police because one of them had outstanding parking tickets.
But even if those were the reasons, the result's still the same. Nobody made that call. And the silence has haunted this case ever since, because people really believe that if the police were called that day, everything could have been different.
Right. And Stacy's family and friends, they have spoken out about this part of the story, too. They've posted reminders online stressing how important it is to call the police if you ever hear something that sounds wrong, even if you're not sure what it is. Those few minutes could mean the difference between life and death, And it's better to be safe and make the call than to live with the regret and consequences of staying silent. So on Monday, March 23rd, it was the 70th Academy Award ceremony. And Danielle and Stacey had both been very excited for it. Danielle was flooding Stacey's voicemail with excited messages about the awards, specifically about Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie The Titanic, since they had seen it together recently. But there was no answer on Stacey's end. At the time, Danielle assumed that Stacey was busy with work, since she had an upcoming work trip to London, but that assumption unraveled fast. The next day, Tuesday, March 24th, everything came crashing down. Around 6 p.m. when Danielle got home from work, she pressed play on her answering machine, and what she heard stopped her cold. It was a voicemail from Stacey's workplace, letting her know that her sister hadn't shown up for work for several days. For Stacey, who was always dependable, always on time, this was completely out of character.
This is where they start to put the pieces together between not getting a call back from Stacey about something they both had been looking forward to, and then hearing that she didn't show up for work. It's like she was missing from her routine, which is why Danielle wasted no time and drove right over to Stacey's apartment.
Right. And when she arrived, she saw Stacey's car parked outside, unmoved, which was the first indication that something was wrong. And inside the apartment, Danielle's worst fears were confirmed. Stacey's purse and keys were still there, untouched, along with an order of breadsticks that were unfinished. Danielle also noticed the refrigerator and cabinets had been left open, but Stacey was nowhere to be found. Danielle reported Stacey missing to the Columbus Police Division immediately. Initially, the case was assigned to the Sexual Abuse Squad, which also handled missing persons. But as Stacey remained unaccounted for, and with troubling circumstances around her disappearance, homicide detectives were soon pulled in to join the investigation. And by Wednesday night, March 25th, police had executed a search warrant of her Governor's Square apartment, treating it as a potential crime scene. They interviewed neighbors, friends, coworkers, and family members, trying to piece together Stacey's last movements. And everyone they spoke to told a similar story. Stacey hadn't been struggling. She wasn't depressed. She wasn't in any sort of visible conflict with anyone. By all accounts, everything in her life was normal right up until the moment she vanished. Inside the apartment, investigators found details that were far from ordinary. They collected several pieces of potential evidence, including a section of a blood-stained carpeting, which was removed, according to contemporaneous news reports from the late 1990s. It was one of the first concrete signs that something violent might have happened, leading investigators to believe that Stacey had been abducted.
And up until then, you could maybe hope that Stacey had just gone off on her own or that she would turn up safe. But finding blood on the carpet, right in her apartment, that's a sign that you just can't ignore. That's the moment you realize that you're not dealing with just a disappearance, but something way more sinister than that.
Right. And at this point, it had been 5 days since Stacey was seen alive.
So, I mean, that's a long time for just a simple scare.
Yeah, but that initial evidence didn't do much to lead investigators in the right direction. Detectives canvassed the Governor's Square apartments, questioning neighbors again, combing for witnesses who might have seen or heard something. They also pulled in Stacey's friends, co-workers at American Electric Power, and her sorority sisters from Ohio State. But none of these efforts yielded any results. Flyers with Stacey's photo spread across campus and throughout Columbus. Community members, including her OSU sorority sisters and coworkers, joined vigils, determined to keep her name and face in the public view. But those first weeks didn't bring the breakthrough they all hoped for. Tips came in, rumors circulated, but nothing pointed to Stacey's whereabouts. Even with the evidence taken from her apartment, there was just no clear suspect and no clear timeline beyond the last night she was heard alive. For her family, it was agonizing.
How could it not be? And the strength they showed was amazing. They were constantly making public statements to continue the efforts towards finding Stacy. Even her uncle, Gerald Colbert, was extremely emotional, but pressed the community at her vigil on March 31st, saying, "The only way we can bring her back is the media. We need to make her face as common as President Clinton."
And this continued throughout the search for Stacy, while police chased multiple leads that didn't seem to get them much closer to finding her. As the investigation progressed, detectives identified two men in Stacy's circle who they wanted to speak with more closely. And according to a news article released at the time, police would only say that these two men were close associates of Colbert's, had retained legal counsel, and also refused polygraph test. Police suspected that Stacy may have let one or both of them into her apartment on March 21st. At its core, the police were pursuing any lead, especially those that could clarify who was in that apartment late Friday evening. The fact that these two individuals chose to lawyer up and decline polygraph test naturally raised suspicion, even if refusal alone doesn't prove guilt.
Well, the truth is, polygraphs are widely considered unreliable in forensic terms. Many law enforcement agencies treat them more like a tool, not conclusive proof of innocence or guilt. But that's exactly where the tension builds, because on one hand, you do have the legitimate legal right not to self-incriminate and lawyer up. But on the other hand, in a case with almost no leads, that decision carries weight. It's a red flag to the public when there's nowhere else to look, especially given that Stacy allegedly knew them well enough to let them inside of her apartment.
Right, and that's why polygraphs are still useful. You can't use them in court, but it's a way to apply pressure and see if you're going in the right direction as an investigator. But sadly, the walls were put up there. 6 months into Stacy's disappearance, the case was basically a dry well. According to Crime Stoppers Detective Tom Randall, who said that no suspects could be tied to DNA evidence. Ronna Colbert, Stacy's mother, had moved to Columbus from Atlanta to be with Danielle, and said that every day got more difficult as time went on. According to The Lantern, Stacy's employer, American Electric Power, stepped in, helping to hang flyers, attending vigils, and even offering a $10,000 reward in collaboration with Stacy's grandfather for information leading to the arrest of whoever was responsible for her disappearance. On top of that, Crime Stoppers put up an additional $1,000 reward for tips that could lead to an arrest and indictment. Members and alumna of Stacy's sorority led a community awareness campaign during which they placed more than 100,000 flyers and yellow ribbons around the Columbus area. No one was willing to give up. So in July of that year, one particular man stood out in this case, a Columbus resident who had pleaded guilty to two sexual assaults around the same time that Stacy disappeared. This man's name surfaced not just because of his criminal history, but something even more chilling. In court, one of his victims testified that during an attack, he told her that the sorority girl in Columbus was not really missing. And to detectives, it was an eerie statement and one that couldn't be ignored.
Okay, to me, that would be enough to assume that he was talking about Stacy. According to the victim, he didn't say her name, but to say the sorority girl isn't missing, that's pretty specific. I mean, how many other sorority girls in the Columbus area were missing during that time? It can't be a lot, especially with this much media coverage.
Right, and it was a pretty compelling lead, but publicly, investigators refused to comment on it. Detective David Morris on the Columbus Division of Police only said that the best thing he could say was no comment. Another detective, Pat Barr, said that there's certain things he has done and he's piqued their interest, but no further details were given. And that's where the lead kind of just dies as far as its appearance in news reports. If you're listening to us, then we already know that you're a fan of true crime podcasts. But if you're looking for something a little different to add to your collection, we're talking something where you don't just listen, but actually take part, then you've got to check out Truth and Justice with Bob Ruff. Truth and Justice isn't your typical true crime show. This podcast takes you inside real-time, crowdsourced investigations into wrongful convictions. Listeners are part of the process, sharing tips, digging into evidence, and helping uncover the truth. The show has a massive library to binge. In season two, their work led to an innocent man walking free after years behind bars in Texas. Season five was a deep dive into the infamous West Memphis 3 case, which has already resulted in new DNA testing. And now, in season 17, they're investigating the case of Chris Bynum, who was wrongfully convicted of a horrific quintuple homicide in Gary, Indiana. So, if you want to move beyond just listening to true crime and actually be a part of the investigation, subscribe to Truth and Justice today, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
So from there, the case kind of sat in limbo. The sorority continued to post news flyers, and Stacy's family tried to cope as the years went by without any new information about Stacy's disappearance. 6 years went by without a word until November of 2004. On the 27th, a hunter searching for his lost dog stumbled across something horrifying in a wooded area near Radnor in northern Delaware County. Beneath a mound of tree limbs and debris, he uncovered human remains. The skeleton was hidden under a rough covering of branches and brush, as if someone had tried to make sure it would never be found. And the police were called immediately, and they came out to inspect the remains. Initially, an anthropologist said that the body was likely a woman in her 40s who was about 5 feet 3 inches tall.
Okay, so it's not Stacy because she's, what, 23, 5'1"?
Right, but that changed in early December. Just days after the discovery, investigators confirmed what Stacy's family had feared for more than 6 years. Through dental records, the remains found were officially identified as Stacy Colbert. According to later reports, the anthropologist had made the error in age because of the fact that part of Stacy's pelvis was missing from the remains. The effects of weather and Stacy's level of activity and athleticism causing the remains to be more wear down than someone else of that age.
Which is crazy because the anthropologist making that statement could have thrown this whole investigation off.
Yeah, either way, for police, the announcement brought both clarity and confusion. Stacy had been found, but the condition of her remains left more questions than answers. Investigators could not say exactly when she had been placed in that wooded area. At the time, officials told reporters that all they knew for sure was that it had been more than 2 years since she had been in that location. An interview they did showed that people had been working in that location about 5 years ago, which was the only time they had been in that area. So it was a wide spectrum of time, anywhere between 2 and 5 years.
And timing can be everything in a homicide investigation. If police don't know when she was put there, they can't line it up neatly with suspects, movements, or alibis. It leaves a gaping hole in the timeline. And for Stacy's family, it was just a second blow. They finally had confirmation that she was gone, but still, there was no answers about how, when, or why.
Yeah, and 6 years of weather, shifting soil, and animal activity had eroded so much of what might have been left behind. Detectives recovered Stacy's remains carefully, but there were no obvious personal belongings, clothing fibers, or weapons. Officials admitted that they had little to work with and that narrowing down the time frame or cause of death would be next to impossible. There was no direct forensic evidence to tie anything or anyone to the scene. The discovery offered heartbreak and no resolution. Larry Colbert, Stacy's father, said that as far as closure is concerned, there's no such thing. God forbid that you should ever have to go through something like that. There's no way I can explain it. He explained how he 'd spoken to Stacy the night that she disappeared, talking about how excited she was about the upcoming work trip to London. He said, "I knew in my heart she was dead 24 hours after we didn't hear from her." Danielle, Stacy's sister, got the call on her 3-year wedding anniversary. She said, "I was very sad, but it's good to know what happened." She said that she held no hope of her sister being alive, but still yearned to learn the truth. She said, "When you're sitting there without any answers, you almost don't know what to wish for."
Yeah, I honestly can't imagine that feeling. I mean, getting more and more of the pieces of the truth, but never really knowing the full story. Police couldn't figure out what Stacy's cause of death was since it had been so long, but at least they knew where Stacy was. And now you have more questions. Where does the investigation even go from here?
Well, after Stacy's remains were found and identified, the Columbus Division of Police in the Delaware County Sheriff's Office continued to pursue leads. Detectives re-interviewed witnesses, they revisited persons of interest, and sought to test forensic evidence. But the challenge, it was the same. Stacy's body had been exposed for years. There was weather time and decomposition that erased the clues investigators hoped for. No clear cause of death, no DNA, no weapon left behind. They were just still stuck in the same limbo that they had been before her body was found. Up until this day, Stacy's murder has never been solved.
That's crazy. I mean, it doesn't even feel like Stacy's discovery gave any closure, especially given the statements of her father. It's been more than 25 years since she's vanished. It must be heartbreaking. Are there even any loose ends that we can tie up?
Well, even though it's been decades since Stacy vanished, investigators haven't given up. In fact, the Delaware County Sheriff's Department has publicly stated on several occasions that Stacy's case is solvable. They've said that they do have a person of interest, and they're confident beyond a doubt that this individual is responsible for Stacy's murder. But knowing who likely did it isn't the same as proving it in court. For investigators, what they need is someone who knows something, someone who's willing to come forward. Even the smallest detail could provide the break needed to build a case strong enough for a guilty verdict. Detective Jeff Bessinger of the Delaware County Sheriff's Office vowed that solving this case isn't just a job for him, but a deeply personal mission. He promised that he would get this guy, and it's a relentless pursuit for him.
Well, do we even have any information on who this guy is?
Well, it seems like Stacy's family definitely know who he is. It suggested that this person was a friend, someone she would have permitted into her apartment on the night she vanished. This theory is supported by the fact that her apartment showed no signs of forced entry. Now, there's some unverified claims referenced online that say this individual had previously helped Stacy move apartments and later refused to cooperate with investigators, declining both polygraph testing and interviews. Another disturbing detail that's frequently cited, again, from informal online sources, is that Stacy had been verbally harassed by this person before her disappearance, though this is not documented in any law enforcement reporting. And of course, if police are still trying to gather evidence against this man, they're not going to release much information about who he is, as it's an ongoing case. I have seen in social media comments people using his initials, but I don't want to share them here because we don't want to do anything to affect this investigation. But Stacy's family is sure that he is the one responsible for her death.
So this could be one of the two guys that were mentioned before, the ones that denied the polygraphs and lawyered up. Another podcaster actually said that they know who this person is, as they were told his name by Stacy's family. Obviously, they didn't share his name, but they talked about his criminal history as well, which is problematic. It includes stuff like traffic violations and assault.
Right. And hopefully, one day, this person will be held accountable for what they did to Stacy. Without a witness or strong physical evidence, the case remains frustratingly suspended in silence. Stacy's sister, Danielle, continues to live with the divide in time, life before Stacy vanished and life after. In 2019, Danielle said simply, "My life is really before that call and after that call." She carried that split with grace, keeping her sister's memory alive while living through unimaginable loss. Stacy's father never saw justice for his daughter, passing away in 2007 at the Ohio State University Medical Center after battling a long illness. He was 63 years old at the time. Detective Jeff Bessinger emotionally shared that he watched Stacy's father pass away, saying that he answers to Danielle and he answers to Stacy. Danielle wrote a note to Stacy on March 30th in 2007, which read, "Stacy, you are a part of my life every day in my thoughts and feelings. I was thinking about you and remembering good stories on your birthday. You have a new niece and nephew who remind me of you in many ways. They were born very close to your birthday. Dad also passed away on February 13th. He is now with you. Try not to be so hard on him. I love you, Danielle." Stacy's mother, Rana, remains at home, moving away in the years following Stacy's case. Speaking through tears, she reflected, quote, "The hardest thing as a parent is when someone says, 'How many children do you have?' and to say, 'I had two.' The physical pain is gone, but the sorrow and the grief is never gone."
Wow. I mean, how sad is it that Stacy's dad never saw justice, and how Danielle still spends every day with Stacy in her heart?
Yeah.
And I don't mean to change the mood, but I kind of have to ask. I know a lot of people are wondering this. What happened to Stacy's cat? The neighbors saw him wandering around outside, but they didn't do anything about it. Was he ever found?
Yeah. So thankfully, Stacy's family and friends on the Finishing Stacy's Fight Facebook page explained what happened to Stacy's furry friend. So after Stacy disappeared, it was her sister Danielle who quickly tracked Boots down, thanks to a flyer posted at the Governor's Square complex. But Danielle wasn't in a position to take him in, so one of Stacy's closest sorority sisters stepped up, bringing Boots into her apartment. She already had a cat, and her roommate did too, which means three cats under one roof, more than a handful. And the name Boots had never been Stacy's favorite name for him, and another sorority sister suggested calling him Cookie, a nickname Stacy herself had once carried. Everyone agreed, and from then on, Boots became Cookie. Cookie eventually found his forever home with another sorority sister who had just gotten married. She remembered him as unusually sweet, though shy at first. But anyway, he bonded with her other cat, Minnie, and slowly came out of his shell. Cookie became a fixture in her family's life, even showing up on TV during interviews about Stacy's case. She said it wasn't uncommon to get calls from so-called pet psychics who wanted to talk with Cookie and ask him what he knew about Stacy. Of course, she never returned those calls. And so as the years went on, Cookie's story became one of healing. When his family welcomed a baby girl, Cookie immediately stepped into the role of guardian and companion. He slept in her room every night, sat outside her door when she was away, and became the keeper of all her secrets. He lived a long, full life, passing away in early 2017 at the age of 19.
I mean, that's kind of a beautiful story. Cookie got to live this long, loving life, carrying Stacy's nickname with her closest friends. And in a way, it feels like Stacy was still with them through him. He carried this piece of her forward. He was a reminder of Stacy, alive and loved every single day.
It is so sweet. And Stacy definitely still lives on through her friends and family's continued fight for justice. Together, they've created a campaign called Finishing Stacy's Fight, which I've mentioned before, but it's a dedicated effort across social media to keep Stacy's name alive and her case in the public eye. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, X, LinkedIn, and Lemonade. Their mission is simple and powerful: to keep the pressure on both law enforcement and on anyone who might be withholding information. Because after more than two decades, they believe that someone out there still knows something that could lead to an arrest. And their Facebook page is honestly really impressive. It has podcaster resources with helpful tips about Stacey's case, a digital scrapbook with memories of Stacey, condolences, news media articles, true crime podcasts, and discussions about her, and thousands of posts that make sure the right information is out there. Most of the information we got for this episode was from this page. Their efforts so many years later is so inspiring.
Yeah, honestly, that digital scrapbook is especially crazy to read. It's full of emails from Stacey's close ones submitting stories and memories that they had with Stacey. So no one can forget who she was.
Yeah, it really shows how positive, energetic, goofy, fun, and truly just an amazing person Stacey was. I would strongly suggest that you all listening go visit the Finishing Stacey's Fight page on any social media platform. They actually have a GoFundMe running right now where they're trying to raise funds to hire a private investigator in hopes of moving Stacey's case forward with the quote, "This monster has been free for 25 years. It's time to get him off the streets and behind bars." They also continue to compel people who speak up, saying, "Regardless of your intention, your pact of silence is violence. It's violence against every woman he's ever met. It's a violence against every woman he'll ever meet. It's not too late." I can go on about this page forever, but they debunked the fact that the pizza delivery boy or neighbor who heard Stacey screaming were involved. They fully cooperated with police and were quickly cleared. And also, the man who was convicted of sexual assault and allegedly mentioning Stacey to be one of the victims was proven to be a lie.
Oh, wow.
In late 2024, YouTube commenters began to speculate that Stacey's sorority sisters were involved. However, all of Stacey's sorority sisters were fully cooperative with the investigation and were never considered suspects. They remain committed to seeking justice for Stacey. If you have any information that you would like to share about Stacey's case, no matter how small, you can call the Delaware County Sheriff's Office at 740-833-2800, or you can email finishingstaceysfight@gmail.com. You can also submit anonymous tips by visiting the Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost's page, which is linked on any Finishing Stacey's Fight page, and we'll also link it in the description. It's believed that the monster who stole Stacey's life told at least one person what he did. Is it you?
Wasn't me.
I want to end with a poem that one of Stacey's friends sent in as a remembrance of her, and it reads, "Stacey, how can someone just disappear, as if she never even was? How can unconceived dreams and plans just be snatched by another hand? Where is she? It's been so long, and yet my heart remembers. The way she'd dance, almost gracelessly, somewhat offbeat, singing slightly off key. Oh, and that inviting, friendly smile, her humor, her gentle heart, her honesty. And I remember how she would delight and chasing away someone who tried to overstay his welcome. How she made me laugh. There was that one late night she called for advice because she was afraid of this one who just wouldn't go away. Oh, and I remember she was loyal. I knew I could always depend on this. Daughter, sister, friend, my dear friend." Stacey was more than a victim. She was a daughter, a sister, a friend.
More than anything, Stacey deserves to be remembered for the light she brought into the world, not just the darkness of how she was taken.
And this is where we leave Stacey's case for now. A young woman who lived with so much joy and promise, taken too soon and still waiting for justice. So if you know anything at all about what happened to Stacey Colbert, please come forward. Even the smallest detail could be what finally brings answers to her family. Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode. We appreciate your support in sharing Stacey's story and helping keep her memory alive. If you'd like to support our show, you can leave us a comment or share this episode with a friend. Thank you so much for being here with us. We'll see you next time.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.